Morning. Jonathan, you sure you want to talk for about 15, 20 minutes here? Introduce and... No, I'm joking. I'm a little bit more nervous today about this one. So this kind of a tough text, and we're going to... And be sure and keep Pastor Steve in prayer as well as we continue this series, because we're getting into more difficult waters here as we try to explain different things. So definitely keep him in prayer for that. First thing I want you to think about, though, is what is currently not in your reality? Like, maybe it's real estate, maybe it's something material. So real estate, a home, maybe it's financial. Maybe you want more money, a different job that earns more money. Maybe it's vocational. Maybe you want a different career that has more influence. You just kind of feel like, I'm not getting much attention here, you know, but if I had something like this, I could get more exposure. Or maybe it's relationship. Maybe you're a single person and you feel like that you've passed that single test and you're ready for that spouse and you're just wanting that. You're ready for that. Or maybe you're a couple that wants children and you're just ready for that, but maybe you can't have children. Maybe there's an issue that's going on. You know, how would you envision your life if you had these things? First, I want to read a promise that was given to a man, basically the same author of Romans, and it's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 9. I'm just going to paraphrase it. And Paul writes, he says, three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So those times, you know, God doesn't always say that he's going to take those things away from you. He doesn't always say that there's going to be a check coming into the mail or maybe this natural healing. You're going through a disease or maybe through cancer or loss of a loved one or... God doesn't always promise the way that we hope will happen with us. But God's grace is sufficient. And so that's kind of what I'm going to focus on today is God's grace. I think we need to have a better understanding of that as we get in today's text. So we're going to get into Romans chapter 8, verses 5 through 8. And if you're able, we'll go ahead and stand and read in reverence of God's word. And it reads, those who live according to the sinful nature have their minds set on what that nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. The sinful mind is hostile towards God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those controlled by the sinful nature cannot please God. And so, and you guys can be seated. Nerves are still there, so just pardon me. But in our series in Romans, we've started with chapter 1, going all the way up to this point. We've talked about God's original plan, but the way that we tarnished it back in Genesis. And then in Romans chapter 3 through 5, we heard the word justification. Over 30 times, you know, Paul mentions that word, where Jesus made the sacrifice that was necessary for that family relationship to restore that brokenness. Then in chapter 6, Paul basically says that we can overcome sin. And then on... But, however, we see, if we look back in the Old Testament, and then I suppose many of you can attest, as well as myself, that even though we can overcome sin, we're still having that cycle. We still go through that. And even if we look back in the Old Testament, in Exodus and Judges, we see that the people went up to the temple and gave their sacrifices. God wiped the slate clean, but when they went back, they just fell into this old cycle again. It wasn't good enough. So Paul discusses this cycle in chapter 7. And in summary, You know, sin will overcome us as God's law makes us aware of our shortcomings. If you remember that, you know, the law, Paul mentioned that I wasn't aware of my sin until I saw God's law. So basically what these people needed in the Old Testament, what we need, it'd be nice to have a helper to operate from the center of our being. If it could help from within, rather than just trying to follow the external laws, perhaps maybe that cycle can be broken. So Paul begins to answer those questions on who this helper is in Romans chapter 8, because we find that Christ's forgiveness is not enough for us to turn over a new leaf. But I believe it starts that we need to truly understand God's grace. We need to truly understand who He is. Our lack of understanding of grace will determine the quality of our life here on earth, and then even our destination as we depart here from this world. You know, interesting enough, this week in the Advent season is joy. The word grace, when we break it down, for those that are into Greek, it's the word charis, charis. And the root word is charo, which means joy. So in verse 5 in chapter 8, Paul talks about, you know, if our minds are on the flesh, we're driven by fleshly desires. So we have the carnal mind, our affections, our mental processes, and our will. All of that is driven by the flesh if that's what we're pursuing. But if our mind is on spiritual things, and if we truly understand God's grace, we're able to approach Him, then that can affect our affections, our mental processes, and will. And all of that is driven by the Spirit. A few weeks ago, Pastor Steve was talking about this carnal mind. Basically, the infection that comes from Adam and Eve, you know, thanks to them, right? Pass that along to us. It twists our thinking to prefer things that we want more than anyone else, even God. We're always looking out for number one. And the very core of us, we want to keep our hands on the steering wheel. We want to drive. And then we see this infection. We saw it this morning even during children's chat. You know, I don't want someone to tell me what to do. Right? I think of my son Eli. My wife and I could agree that we've told him to do some things, or don't touch this, don't play with that. Many of you parents can attest to that. You see that infection in your kids, right? And then a few weeks ago, we saw a clip on Monsters University with the first competition where the one monster sees those things that cause him to balloon up and get infected, but he wants to touch them. But they warn him not to touch them. And what's interesting is we get older, we find more sophisticated ways for us to show that self-centeredness, don't we? We get kind of smart about it, how we do it. We try to rationalize and try to figure out how to do that. But any time that we break God's will, and any time we try to go to our own direction and affirm our preference and self-sovereignty, you know, we break God's heart. And at times, we just keep going that direction, and we don't know why. You know, Paul even tells us that in Romans chapter 7. I still do these things, but I don't know why. It's still happening. The cycle is not broken. Who can save me? Who can help me break this cycle? When I was in high school, and my mother can attest to this, that I loved the Greek mythology, reading about the gods and the goddesses. I remember the stories about Homer and the Adventures of Odyssey, or not Adventures of Odyssey, in Odyssey. I want to make sure we keep this thing separate here. But he was talking about Odysseus, okay, his 20-year journey being lost from home. And poor Odysseus would never know what he was going to get into. He would, you know, see gods and goddesses that would sometimes hear his cries. Sometimes they would answer his prayers, but sometimes they wouldn't. Sometimes they'd be mean to him. Sometimes they'd mock him. But the spiritual lesson I took from that is, as I read a lot of different stories about that, I noticed that the heroes, anytime the God that they followed in there, they took more on of that character, of that God. You know, they followed him to do some good things. Sometimes they followed some gods and goddesses to do bad things. But they just took on that character on that. Now we need to think about the gods that we have, that we've set up. The financial gods, the money. Just different things, things that we follow that dictate our actions. I think that's why the concept of holiness is so important for Christians. We'll never understand many of the things about God on this side of eternity, will we? But the Bible makes it perfectly clear that in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 2, God says that we need to be holy because I am holy. So what can we do to help ourselves to be like God? There's really not much we can do. No matter how hard we try, no matter how much of willpower that we have, we can't be holy like God is holy. But if we approach God, he can radically change the core of our beings with his forgiveness and grace. Next one is flesh versus the spirit, verses 6 through 8. In this part, you know, Paul writes, "The mind is governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile towards God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so, and those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God." You know, when we're being dictated by the flesh, we're not able to see God's blessings. And sometimes we even pursue God as like this cosmic vending machine. We just approach him and expect him to be like a Santa Claus. We have these things, these hopes and dreams that we want, but God knows what's better for us, but we just don't see that at all. Last night, Jillian and I watched the movie God Bless the Broken Road. I think there was a lot of dust in the air that night because my eyes were getting watery, so I was trying to get off. That's what I'm saying anyway. But I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it completely related to what I'm talking about today, how we lose sight of the blessings that God has given us, but we're looking for different things. We're pursuing the wrong thing. And what keeps us from truly experiencing God's grace is that we have this carnal mind where we want to keep control and we don't see God's blessings. If you guys look at the top of the bulletin, look at C.S. Lewis's quote, and I know there's a typo in there, if it's still on there, but I took this from Mere Christianity. And sometimes our mirror gets a little dirty, and we're not able to reflect what God is doing. I'm going to do something different today. I've never done this before. I've done this at the high school, but if you're able to, some people are uncomfortable with doing this. But if you can close your eyes for a second, well, not for a second, but. But just close your eyes. I want you to think about what's going on with your life. I want you to think about who God is and what his reaction is about those things. I'm going to suggest to you that whatever snapshot you have is probably marred. Understand that he's not like your dad. He's not like a pastor you met. He's not like a bad experience you've had. He's not a God whose arms are crossed in the sense of, you need to get with the program. He's not a God who's down on you. He is a God who's abundant in grace and goodness. He wants to protect you and love you. Think of a picture of a mom when she hears a baby crying. She rushes in. Where does she get that? That's the goodness of her heart wanting to comfort her child. When you hurt, that's how God feels about you. If your dad, if you're a dad and someone picks on one of your kids or wants to hurt them or take them or kidnap them, there's something in a dad that steps in and goes, hey, you mess with my son and you mess with me. That's how God feels when danger and darkness and difficulty and pain comes into your life. Okay, you can open your eyes. He's a God you can trust. And when we come to our senses, it always begins with reconciliation. When we watched that movie last night, when God blessed the broken road, the lady just was in desperation. She came to her senses. I want you to see a true picture of God, though. If you turn to Luke chapter 15, I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to talk about it. But this is the only time in Scripture where Jesus has three stories in one parable. He wants to dramatically emphasize something that's essential to his audience of that time, and then even to us as he's talking about this. As a teacher, as many other teachers in this room can attest, whenever you see a pattern or something repeated several times, it must be important. These three stories have that pattern. You see that something valuable is lost, but something extremely valuable is found. And at the end of each thing, there's celebration after celebration. There's excitement and joy. You know, I got the sheep. The woman says, I found the coin. She's going on Facebook. She's posting. Hey, you got to come over here and look at this. I found the coin. Now, in the third story, with this Jewish culture, both the disciples and the Pharisees are shocked by what Jesus is talking about because this was not acceptable during that time. What Jesus is teaching is that sinners matter to God, even religious sinners, because we got two people in here, the older brother and the younger brother, both on different ends of the spectrum. But the message is clear in this story that God is pursuing you. And in fact, if you look through these three stories, we go from 100 to 10 to 1 out of 2, even into this room, that God says, you matter, I love you, I'm seeking you. Now, both the older brother and younger brother, they're both far from God, but they don't know it. But then we read that the younger brother comes to his senses, reconciliation, out of desperation. And then he goes to his father and runs, is coming up to him. But then the father actually runs out to his son. And then the son experiences that inner joy and that peace that we experience from God's grace. Now, both the older brother and the younger brother, both of them had pockets of emptiness. And they both attempted to fill that emptiness. The younger brother with his wild living, maybe addictions, maybe tried to fit in socially, just felt like, you know, things weren't working out. But then the older brother with religion, trying to do everything right, focusing on all the wrong things, even though he had all these blessings around him. You know, I believe at times we struggle on waiting on God's timeline because maybe we're focusing on the wrong thing. Maybe we're just kind of in the wrong place spiritually. You know, if we take a look back, you know, we did a series on Exodus. It took 40 years for God to get Egypt out of the Israelites and for them to be in a position for God to bless them. We just need to understand that God wants to release these blessings in the lives of his people. And the thing that we need to discover is that if we're not ready for those blessings, those could actually be a curse if God were just to say yes to everything that we wanted. I mean, talk to 50% of the married people in our country that just decided, you know what, I need a spouse. They got married, but 50% of them, according to statistics, they're miserable. You know, we need to have His kingdom first, having our sights that are towards heaven rather than here. We don't need to look left and right. We need to look up. You know, when I was digging through some old notes, because I was really struggling with this today, we're getting into a difficult passage. But I was digging through some old notes, and I was reminded about my prayer life. And this is actually, God's actually working with me on this as well. I don't know if you've heard David Bach or not, but he's an author, a financial planner. And when he wrote Smart Couples Finish Rich, started out with Smart Women Finish Rich in 99. But whenever he meets with anybody, he has them write down five values and says, hey, you need to look at these five values every single day, and that's how you need to build your retirement around. So I implemented that into my prayer life. I wrote my five values down and got some goals listed along with those values. And it was just kind of crazy how I started gravitating towards things without even me trying. It just happened. My attitude was different. I reacted differently to things. And I'm like, you know what? I need to do that again. I need to get back to doing that. You know what's interesting is, we can go to the next slide. What's interesting is that the Bible is filled with real stuff day to day. If you read through cover to cover, I've done it several times, looking through that, we see a lot of examples of both good and bad people. God didn't have those stories removed, so that way we would know what we needed to do. I do want to look at one more case study. I think is it the one before, I think, 1 Samuel. There we go. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. There's a story about Elkanah and his two wives in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. First thing I do want to point out is that this is a polygamous relationship, okay? But I do want to remind everyone that if we look at Genesis, God never ordained this, okay? So, and when Jesus came onto this earth and reestablished what God's intentions were, that, you know, it's supposed to be between one man and one woman. But I think at times, you know, most men would look at this and say, hey, I could do two wives. You know, I could have two wives. I can attest, I can only handle one. And think about it, two mother-in-laws? No way. couldn't happen. But there's some people out there thinking that have this ego, yeah, I could handle that. And one of my roommates used to say, you know, be sure not write a check that reality won't cash. And I love that. I always want to say that to some of my parents that I talk to with students, that reality will not cash that check. But, you know, over time, though, as men's hearts were hardened, though, they thought that this was the way to go, and so that's what they did, and God just tolerated that first season. But now back to our story, though. I wanted us to focus a little bit on Hannah, on how she reacts. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but Elkanah loved Hannah, but Hannah's womb was closed. She couldn't have kids. This was a disgrace in the Jewish culture. But Hannah focused on that because Peninnah, Elkanah's other wife, reminded her of that, and she was just filled with grief. But we don't see her once. We don't see Hannah, you know, try to take vengeance on her or try to be mean. Hannah continued to be kind towards her. You know, you're going to find, like Hannah, in our life, that we have people that basically are haters in our life, basically rivals, people that are enemies and that we get so fixated on. And sometimes we've been even harboring those people, we've been pulling them along because we don't want to forgive them. And sometimes you're expecting this apology that you want from them. You're like, you know, next time I see them, this time they have to apologize to me. It's not going to happen probably, right? But see, the thing is, though, this example is we can't afford to harbor these people. We can't afford to take these people with us in our hearts. We got to remember what God said, that vengeance is mine, and I will repay, says the Lord. When we choose to not give that, share that forgiveness that God shares with us, you know, basically what we're telling God is, hey, I got this covered. You know, I want to have a bad attitude towards them. I want to talk about how bad they are with other people for years to come. I want to make sure everyone around me knows that they're no good. And, you know, the problem with unforgiveness is almost like you drinking the poison and expecting the other person to die. That's basically what it's like. You know, have you ever noticed those people, though, that have hurt you, that have done something? They're just going on with their lives, aren't they? And you're just like, how can they be going on with their life? But Jesus says that we must forgive. And that means when we forgive, forgiveness means we send them away. We put them into God's hands. Then in verse 12 and 15, we see an example of people that we can have in our life that are well-intentioned, but they have a degree in presumption. Have you ever met those people? They presume things. They come to conclusions about your life. You know, they always operate on that. You know, some of them are so arrogant in their own mind that they don't have to have proof. If they just think it, they know it has to be. And then, of course, these people are in your life. They're well-intentioned, and they think they know what's going on in your life based on what they think. And so in verse 14 of 1 Samuel, it talks about this priest Eli. He's well-intentioned. Hannah needed him at this moment to be there, but instead of Eli coming up to her and saying, hey, have you had some wine today? He just comes up to her and says, how long are you going to keep getting drunk? Just says that immediately. You know, he was a priest. He was well-intentioned, but the thing that he said could have offended Hannah. But if you notice how she responds to him, she tells him, you know, her story and everything. But think about these people in your life. Some of these people you can't get away from. And sometimes the enemy will try to make you lose sight and lose focus on God because you felt offended or disrespected by these people. You know, these are the times we need to go hard after God, when you need to keep that prayer life and keep reading in His Word. Because, yes, you're not going to be able to get rid of those well-intentioned people in your life. And you really don't want to. You don't want to be alone. And, of course, sometimes we don't have that choice. I think of people like my mother-in-law. Sometimes she gets on my nerves. But she's well-intentioned. And my father-in-law always reminds me, Dustin, don't, you know, I'm just going to say sorry for my wife. She feels like she has to take care of our family all the time and all of this. So she's well-intentioned, but we need to continue to have that ability to respond correctly to that. There are always going to be people that get on our nerves. But I want you to understand over this, sometimes there's just way too many marriages, there's churches, there's fellowship groups, prayer partners that are just breaking up over petty things just because we get offended by something. But we need to realize that we need these well-intentioned people in our life. So we need to respond like Hannah did. But the question is, how do we get there? How do we have something direct our attitude? You know, there's a word. We can go to the next one, actually. Next slide. There's a word called consecration. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but most people think it's surrender, to surrender. And when we think of that word surrender, we think like we need to put our hands up, we're waving the white flag to our enemy that we give up. But consecration is not that. Consecration, to put it simply, is if you're a parent, you're going to be able to understand this, or an aunt, grandparent, uncle. When you have a child that makes a gift for you, tries to wrap it up, is it perfect? No. But that's what consecration is, that we take our imperfections and we offer that up to God, what we have. This Christmas, I want you to think about salvation being God's gift to us, but our gift to God is consecration. Lastly, I want to close with this. One of my instructors told me this story, and I reflected on it as I was putting this together. He talked about a bag lady when he lived in Cincinnati. There was this bag lady that always walked outside. Nope, she never talked to anybody. Wore the same clothes. She wore like a black overcoat, kind of like a wool coat, buttoned all the way to the top. She'd walk out and she'd collect cans, different trash, and just always collect different things. Just walking around, just kind of a mystery lady. But every day she would come out. And one day she didn't come out. Everyone's kind of wondering, oh, this is kind of strange. Second day came by, she didn't come out again. The third day, didn't come out. So the neighbors started getting nervous and worried about her, so they called the police. They got into her house, and of course, they expected to find this, but they found just piles of trash from the floor to the ceiling. They had to make their way through, back to the hallway, back to the back room, and they found the old lady. She had passed away and just laying in her bed. So they started taking out all the garbage out of her house. Then they got down to the couch in the living room. Didn't feel like it was cotton in there, but it was kind of sounded like paper. So they opened it up, expecting to find more garbage in there. They found cash. Every single pillow, they found cash. Then, of course, they went to the bedroom and the bed, opened it up. That was the mother load. When they counted all the cash, this lady had over $2 million at her disposal. But why did she live the way that she did? You know, when I think about Christians struggling in this life, where God has all these provisions, I think about that story, how this old lady had $2 million at her disposal, but yet she lived the way that she did. As Christians, you know, we struggle with resisting temptation, remaining consistent, controlling our emotions, our reactions, how we react to things. But God's provisions are all around us, but yet we're still trying to take it on our own to take spiritual matters, you know, by ourselves. You know, living righteously in an unrighteous world is tough, especially in a world that doesn't make a place for God. But that story reminds me that we are in the presence of God. He gives us those provisions, but we just need to daily renew our minds, spend time in the Word, spend time in prayer, and use those provisions that He gives us, so that way we can see clearly how God has blessed us and not focus on the things that we wish we were blessed with. Oh, I want that. I want this. But God has provided all of this. We need to see what God has provided for us. God involves Himself. God involves Himself in the most intimate ways. And I think it goes back to that word, grace. Joy. The peace that we can experience as we approach Him, understanding who God is and the power that He can give us.